Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Thursday. Swear, everyday stories break. Live in L.A., it's The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Greg Cosell in 1 hour. If you like betting on football, fantasy football, watching football, get smarter about football, Greg Cosell in 1 hour. Joy Taylor is joining me. Now Brett Favre is saying Aaron Rodgers is out of here. Baker's off social media.
It's a lot going on today, including the end of an era officially in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Big Ben. Where sometimes these stories just line up perfectly for me. So I want to start with this. I think it's fascinating, the psychology of sports and the ego and the money, and these are all very young people, right? And it's a lot to ask for young athletes to be on social media. People are ripping them. They make a lot of money. They're on commercials. They're famous. They probably like being famous. But there's a lot of scrutiny. And we see what social media does to people. And it's much harder to be a pro athlete today in terms of the blowback than it was in Michael Jordan's era. LeBron gets hate all day. Jordan, they don't even show his missed shots on SportsCenter. But what is fascinating about Green Bay is that Aaron Rodgers, the cool Southern California guy, Northern California guy, and Aaron Rodgers, good old Southern boy, they've become the same guy as they've aged in Green Bay. All they do is talk retirement early, want to be catered to, play the victim, straddle the fence between retirement and playing for another team. Two scoops of victimhood. Totally different personalities, totally different cultures they grew up with. And yet these two quarterbacks in the same franchise, good franchise, have become the same guy. I swear to God, it's the same guy. And Brett Favre was talking about it. He was on radio this week talking about Aaron Rodgers' future, and he called it.
I think we may have seen the last of Aaron in Green Bay. I don't know that for certain. It's just a gut. You know, he may try his hand somewhere else now. Nowadays, guys play a lengthy career with a team and move on. So it's, you know, not uncommon for guys to switch teams after a long, productive career somewhere else. And my advice would be, if your gut's telling you, well, yeah, I want to try my hand somewhere else, it's kind of gotten stale here or stagnant or you know, numb, whatever the feeling is, then go give it a try. I think sometimes it's reinvigorating.
He's not talking about Aaron. He's talking about himself. That's what he felt. And Aaron and Favre have grown closer over the years. They had a very prickly relationship. Ask yourself why they've grown closer. Because it's the same life experience. Let me explain. The cheese curds are not doing this. I would call it the Packer quarterback syndrome. You don't have an owner to sometimes overspend, knock on his door, fly in his private jet. Let's make the deal happen. You don't have the ability to land top free agents. A lot of dudes don't want to live there. So as a Packer quarterback in a massive organization that's well run, you're going to win a bunch of games. The networks like Fox are going to put you on. You're going to become beloved in America. And when you don't win those big games, both Favre and Rodgers feel like I'm playing against the stacked deck here. You know, Brady and Manning and those guys have a full deck of cards. I don't have any kings. I lost my jacks too. I lost all my face cards. I don't have an owner to fight for me. I don't have a Robert Kraft. I don't have a Jim Irsay. I don't have a Pat Bowlen in his prime. I don't have the Roonies. I can't go knocking a door. I can't get free agents. Here comes the victimhood. And both Favre and Rodgers privately feel trapped, start talking retirement, and they both know that this position is graded overwhelmingly on Lombardi trophies. That's why Dan Marino may be as great a talent at quarterback as anybody ever. If you didn't see him play, it was unbelievable. But he gets discarded in the great quarterback discussion. He's got no trophies. It's not the cheese curds. Two totally different personalities have become the same guy as they've aged. I would call it the Packer quarterback syndrome. Both privately resentful, biggest name in the state. You start losing the occasional games, especially at home. You take all the heat, and you're saying to yourself, I don't have a Robert Kraft. I can't get free agents here. Favre moved, and there is increasing dialogue today, sometimes from Aaron, that he's moving. It's really interesting. It's fascinating to me. Why these two quarterbacks? Why this franchise? That's the downside to being unique. Artists want to be unique. Actors want to be unique. Green Bay is unique. It's a tiny town. It's not even big enough to be a great college town. It's a tiny town. It's totally unique. But the downside to being unique is when you don't win, people start rolling their eyes. You can't win. It's a tiny town. Who wants to play there? Weird. It's like the post office in 2022, Green Bay. It's like they're still licking stamps and writing letters. It's the Packer quarterback syndrome. It's fascinating to me. Why in the world would these two quarterbacks, such disparate personalities, become the same guy? Literally. The Southern guy, the NorCal guy, the Hollywood guy, the hunt and fish guy, same guy. All right, Big Ben officially is retiring. We knew this some time ago, right? You knew it, I knew it, everybody knew it, but he'd released a video on social. I didn't know Big Ben did a lot of social. And it's funny about Big Ben. People think I'm very, very critical of Ben Roethlisberger. And I have said before, he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Two Super Bowls, eight division titles, all sorts of records. And he will be, I believe, very fondly remembered 20 years from now. 20 years from now, he's going to be two Super Bowls, a big statue out in front of the stadium, top five passing yards, top 10 passing touchdowns, Hall of Famer. But the truth is, if you lived through the last 10 years to 12 years, it was a lot of bumpy. There was a lot of turbulence. He couldn't beat Brady. He couldn't beat Peyton in the big games. He couldn't beat, at the end, Mahomes in the big games. And the minute Joe Burrow walked into the division, see ya, Ben, that's mine too. It was mostly the last decade wins over an overwhelmingly awful Bengals franchise, Brown franchise, and Ben felt like a lot of the last several years he was just holding on as he quickly eroded. It's very Marlon Brando. A lot of you young people don't know who Marlon Brando was. People in their 50s do. In the rearview mirror, he's an all-timer. But the last 15, 20 years of Marlon Brando were weird. He put on, like, a lot of weight, made poor choices, had some bad movies, was impossible to work with. But the movie poster is top five of all time. The movie poster of Ben is going to be great, but we have to distance ourselves from it. Because as Breeze ended pretty elegantly, getting to the playoffs, getting the most out of himself, as Brady ends elegantly, winning Super Bowls, Peyton Manning goes to Denver, wins Super Bowls. You know, Aaron's getting older. He's still 13-3. Name the last time Big Ben won a big playoff game out-dueling another top quarterback. And we led the show with it Monday. Google it. We did. Keep looking. It's 12 years ago. Joe Flacco, divisional round. I'm not going to give you any love for a wild card round win. And I don't even consider Flacco, you know, to be a top guy. He was pretty good quarterback. So it's got that Marlon Brando feel where eventually you look at it and go, oh, that is just unbelievable. But if you were sitting around for the last 15 years, Marlon Brando, like, they had Letterman skits on it. It was like a running joke. He became a caricature of himself. And I've said that about Big Ben. I'm not being critical of him. Super Bowls, division titles, going to have a statue, Hall of Fame, passing yards. But that last 10 years, that was a turbulent flight. And there's just not a lot of Mondays we came on and went, wow, he out-dueled Brady, Mahomes, Manning. And he had, along the way, he had great defenses, which Aaron Rodgers hasn't had. Peyton Manning almost never had. And he has a great coach and a great owner and a great GM. All the stuff that privately Aaron Rodgers and Favre complain about, owner has it. Free agents, get them. Defense, always. Division, cruddy. So I'm not anti-Ben. I just think there are certain actors, certain stars, certain quarterbacks that we remember fondly. But we got to be honest, it was bumpy. Really bumpy and kind of underachieving. I do believe if you gave Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes, Mike Tomlin, that drafting, those receivers, that defense, that division, you'd have had a lot more wins and more Super Bowls. You can think two things, as Joy says, at the same time. He's great, left a lot out there.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Baker Mayfield is in Los Angeles now. He got his rehab on his shoulder, right? He's doing that, and he should. And as I've said many times before, he's not my kind of franchise quarterback. He is a franchise quarterback. I think the media in Cleveland was unduly harsh in the last 6 weeks. The kid was falling apart. He was tough. He was playing through pain. He's obviously better than what we saw in the last 6 weeks. I think he's going to go back. I think he's going to play well next year early. I don't think he's Joe Burrow. I don't think he's Herbert. I don't think he's Josh Allen or Mahomes. I don't. I never did. But he's a franchise quarterback. And I think people got too hard. And I felt like I was being like more reasonable at the end of the year. The kid's just hobbling around with a bad shoulder. You could see the ball come out with no velocity. But this is interesting. So Baker basically yesterday said, I'm signing off social media. And, you do whatever you want. It's yours. And my daughter doesn't use it nearly as much as she did, 2 years ago. I would advise most young people to, it can be vile. It's a toilet. Don't spend too much time on it. But this is all 100% self-induced. It's like Aaron Rodgers complaining about, nobody likes me. Everybody's rooting against me. Well, you criticized a sitting president, doesn't matter if it's a liberal or conservative. You criticized the vaccines, Fauci, the sitting president. You got into fist fights with the media. You're banging on the Packers front office. You don't have a private life. You talk about everything every week. These are polarizing topics. Shocker. You polarize issues and you're polarizing. That's why State Farm dropped Aaron Rodgers off their commercials for a couple of weeks. They didn't want to be involved in it. So Aaron Rodgers, don't wade into polarizing topics and then complain that nobody likes you. Same with Baker Mayfield. Battled the media, battled me until the Browns told him stop reacting to Cowherd. They did. Battling all sorts of people. Snarky this, calling out the medical staff, called out Duke Johnson. Shocker. Those are polarizing things to do. I use a term all the time. It's called quarterback heel. And this was always my knock on Jay Cutler. It has been my knock on Jameis Winston, Cam Newton a little bit, Baker Mayfield, Johnny Manziel. They're not quarterback heel. Be humble. Keep your private life private. Fall on the sword for your teammates if you have to. Stay mostly in your lane. Talk football, maybe family. Be focused on football. It's called quarterback heel. It's why I said this. I was not a fan of Trump. He wasn't presidential. There are certain jobs. I don't want my president weaponizing social media. I don't want my quarterbacks weaponizing social media. You're the face of a franchise. You're a second coach on the field. Stay out of those topics. But both with Rodgers and Mayfield, they waded into it. And now they're like, I don't like the repercussions of it. Then don't wade into it. Because I'll never sign off social media. Joe Rogan will never sign off social media. Nick Wright will never sign off social media. We are in the polarizing business. We are paid to give strong opinions and to have to deal with hate. It's my business, right? Like I have to be in this stuff. It elevates, it promotes, it markets. But this is why I banged on Johnny Manziel out of college, Baker out of college, Jameis Winston out of college. The NFL, it's unfair. We ask a 23-year-old kid to be as mature as a 43-year-old man, and it stinks and it's not fair. But that's why scouts, that's why New England took Johnny Manziel off their board. He just couldn't handle it. Just wasn't a grown-up. Cam Newton wasn't as bad as that, but he wasn't always the most focused, and it was a lot about him. It's got to be about your teammates. You're already going to get all the love, and you're going to get all the money. I mean, quarterback is the royal family in America now. Like, it's not politicians. Quarterbacks are now like NBA stars and international soccer stars. They're making $40 million a year. They got commercials everywhere. Everybody knows you're the rich guy. Be humble. Buy them nice Christmas presents. Buy them lawnmowers and rings and vacations for their families and quarterback eel. So in both Aaron's case and Baker, they wade in the fights and they don't like the repercussions. I've never been in a fight in my life because I don't go to bars and get into fights. Like, you can avoid fights. Don't get into fights because a lot of times you lose fights. And in both Aaron and Baker's case, they don't like the result of their snarkiness, of their independence, of their lead with a chin. I mean, Aaron, you're talking about a sitting president. It's 2022. You're going to get clobbered. It doesn't matter if it's a Republican president or a liberal president. It doesn't matter. You start banging on presidents, you have become divisive. That's why if I had a State Farm deal and I was making $20 million a year in State Farm, that I'm making my money off the field. It's like NBA guys in shoe deals. I don't even need it now. If I can make money in shoe deals and basketball, State Farm or whatever, and football, I don't need to goose up my Instagram and make another $1 million a year. It's just a place. Mostly the great quarterbacks either have somebody else, a team running their social, or they just stay off it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players, rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, these TV ratings are good for this league and bad for this league because all these leagues make their money. NBA ratings have been off for 2 years, and it's concerning, but they still got their money. Hockey ratings are in the tank. They have been forever. They have a huge Canadian contract with the league and a huge American contract. The only thing that works in American television anymore is sports. That is it. Cable TV, it's politics and sports. The only thing that works on linear TV is sports. The ratings are almost irrelevant. Do you want the NBA or not? Most companies would be like, if the NBA was available, we'd probably make a bid on it. I think CBS, NBC, we need stuff in the bandwidth tunnel. We need stuff. And so I don't, you know, all these people, the NBA's ratings. Yes, they're discouraging. And I do think sometimes they didn't navigate some of the social issues as well as they could have. It was a little clumsy. And, you know, I don't like players screaming at fans, KD and Kyrie and getting fined and dropping F-bombs at fans. I don't think that stuff's great. But in the end, the NBA is fine. But this is really amazing. This number is amazing. So Los Angeles and New York are very diverse cities. I mean, New York's got a massive Russian population. So they don't grow up with NFL football. In Los Angeles, the grocery stores, the restaurants, it's incredible the food options. There's nothing like it in America, like Los Angeles County food. I can eat anything, anytime, anywhere. I can go Chilean, anything. It doesn't matter. And that's what makes it such a vibrant art city. It makes it such a vibrant city. But when it comes to television ratings, it's easier to get a big TV rating for the NFL in Green Bay. It's not as diverse. Everybody's a Packer fan. Los Angeles got it. 66% of the TVs in Los Angeles were on the Rams game. The hell? That is in, just let me tell you something. In the TV world, that is the power of the NFL and the Rams playing to the market with a lot of big stars and a lot of big swings. That is an unbelievable rating in this city. That would have been an unbelievable rating. Like when Johnny Carson was in his prime, you know, like in the 70s, you didn't even have, like, nobody was watching cable. You didn't have 500 channels. Like Johnny Carson would get like 70% of America's watching Johnny Carson. Those days are over. And they've been over in big cities for a decade, two decades. That is unbelievable. That is the power of building a glamorous stadium in a, I mean, this has always been a Laker, Dodger, USC town. The Rams didn't even play in L.A. They played in Orange County. The most popular team in L.A. County was always the Raiders. 66% of televisions. There's 7,000 channels. There are millions of people in L.A. County. Their favorite football is the one where you kick it all the time. That is a testament to what the Rams have done. They have taken the Lakers Jerry Buss way to do business. Build, you know, the Forum, the Staples, get a cool stadium. It becomes a social event. It's great on television. Go get a star quarterback, a star center, get a Shaq, get a Kobe, take big swings, almost always get it right. I'm just shocked. I saw that thing this morning. Sam Farmer of the LA Times posted that. Thank you, Sam. Wow. That is it. In the TV, I'm very rarely impressed or shocked by a TV rating. And that is unbelievable. And it's a testament. They have really stolen what the Lakers did with Jerry, the late Jerry Buss. I mean, he made the Laker girls, the Forum. He put the celebrities up front. Like he was decades before his time. He totally understood it was a television show. Wow.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's bring in Greg Cosell, 42 years NFL Films. All right, so I always, you know, we both know, you were the first person to tell me a year before he was in the NFL, you said, there's going to be a kid out of Wyoming. You do this every year. Every year, Greg gives, a year before the draft, when the draft is over, will give me a pamphlet, and it's got the top quarterbacks, receivers, running back, a lot of skill people, and he gives it to me, and you have your grades done. It's fascinating, so I get a cheat sheet. And you were the first person that said, there's this kid, he's a little skinny, he's a little wild, it's Josh Allen. So his career, he's got a lot of spikes and jagged edges to him. But I got to tell you, in the last month, a lot of those jagged edges, if you take away that 50-mile-an-hour win game, something happened over the last five or six games. And Greg, a lot of those jagged edges, he's just giving you good games every quarter, it feels like to me.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing that he's calmer in the pocket and the ball placement has not been an issue. That was always an issue with Josh Allen. It's a big issue coming out. It was a big issue in his first 2 years in the league. He started to get much better at it a year ago in 2020. And this year, for the most part, you don't see the scattershot element to his throws. I mean, in the two playoff games, he did not miss throws. And he's such a physical talent. He certainly can make any throw. And I think the other factor, too, is I think he sees things better now.
Yeah.
And that's something that's often overlooked. We talk about quarterbacks and their physical traits, but you have to see things, and you have to see things before the snap. You have to see things after the snap, because so many defenses try to disguise and use late movement right when the ball snapped. You have to recognize all that, and then you have to immediately know what to eliminate that's not there and what to isolate, where to go with the football. And he's gotten better at that.
So Mahomes had, he's done this twice in his career, where he's had a bumpy 6-7 week stretch. The mechanics get off. He has, it looks like to me, solved a lot of that. He's a very unique quarterback. We never talked arm angles a ton pre-Mahomes.
No.
Now it's all we talk about. So, you know, I think we talked about this last week. What did the tape say against Buffalo?
Well, you're right. We never talked to arm angles when Matthew Stafford's been doing it for 10 years, but he wasn't in playoff games, so we didn't talk about it. But Mahomes changed and evolved over the course of this season. He went through that rough stretch, as you mentioned, Colin, where he had a lot of unnecessary movement. Now, he will always move. I don't think he's one of those quarterbacks that's just going to sit there all the time. He will move. but his movement has become more calculated and more controlled. And the other thing, he's playing with a much greater sense of timing and rhythm. He did not throw a ball this past week that went more than 20 yards in the air from the line of scrimmage. And that tells you an awful lot about how they want him to be a much more controlled player. They want him to hit the back foot and deliver the football. Even that touchdown to Hill that we just saw, you know, that came against two-man coverage, and that was a beautiful throw. That was a timing and rhythm throw. He's become much more of that kind of quarterback over the last half of the season, always with the ability to make those second reaction plays, which obviously showed up against Buffalo.
All right, what is Cincinnati going to have to do? I mean, they've already had a taste of the Chiefs and beat them late in the year. What's the Bengals defense going to have to do against Tyreek and Kelce and an improved offensive line and all the weapons?
Yeah, well, I think when all's said and done, you still have to get pressure on Patrick Mahomes. Look, the Bills could not get him to the ground, but they did get pressure on him. And I think you've got to get pressure on him. Look, let's go back to the Super Bowl a year ago. Certainly, the Bucs defensive line is better from a talent standpoint than the Bengals defensive line. But the Bengals are very creative. They're innovative with their stunt concepts. They do a pretty good job with their pressure schemes. You've got to get pressure on Mahomes. Yes, can he make special plays outside of structure, even when you pressure him? He can. But you can't take the approach that, okay, we're not going to pressure him. We're just going to let him sit there. You can't take that approach. You have to try to make every quarterback play faster.
Yeah.
The idea is to impact the quarterback. And you must try to do that with Mahomes.
Burrow was he outplayed Mahomes. He was very effective against the Chiefs. I don't know if you can duplicate that, but go back to that. What did he do so effectively?
Yeah. Well, what they did a lot of, and Burrow does this against everybody, but it worked in week 17 against the Chiefs, is when he sees one-on-one outside the numbers, and one-on-one doesn't just have to be pure man, it could be his own concept, but outside the numbers, it becomes one-on-one, is he takes those shots. He is very confident. He's very aggressive in his mindset. And in that game, he had Chase on three balls outside the numbers, one-on-one, including a touchdown, all against Charvarius Ward. Here you see one right now. This is the 18-yard touchdown. And then he also hit Higgins outside the numbers, one-on-one against Ward. So Steve Spagnuolo likes to play man coverage. I think you'll see a couple things in this game from the Chiefs, though. You might see them play a little more two-man, which is in their arsenal, where they have two deep safeties. Because the reality is, Colin, with one deep safety outside the numbers, that deep safety is not a factor on any throw.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Green Bay and the Niners. We said going into the weekend, you know, we're starting to get enough evidence now, even at Lambeau as a favorite. I thought Aaron played a little safe. He's always had this personality trait. If you drop a ball, do you fumble? He can ghost you a little bit. It was a lot of Davante Adams and a lot of Aaron Jones. What did the film say? You've been on Aaron for years. You were the first person to go out and say, you said this 5 years ago. You said a lot of times the play is there and he just won't take the layup. And you were on that. So I thought he looked safe. I didn't think he was nearly as daring as a Stafford or a Burrow, but there's a lot of context you could add here. What did the tape say?
Well, I thought he was a little unsettled, Colin. I thought that he was not as calm and comfortable as he normally is in the pocket. He was a little unsettled. The 49ers have a really good pass rush. They get bodies around the quarterback even when they don't sack the quarterback. And I thought that Aaron Rodgers was not a comfortable player. Beginning with the third series of the game, the 49ers started to do some things tactically in specific situations to bracket and double Davante Adams. And, of course, you don't do that on every play, but they did it selectively and in given situations. But this was just not a comfortable game for Aaron Rodgers. And even on that last throw we're just looking at right now, he missed Lazard wide open in the middle of the field, and Lazard would still be running. They probably would have won the game. But he decided to throw it deep when that throw was not there. So he just was not – he did not play an Aaron Rodgers game. He was unsettled, and he didn't see things as clearly as he almost always does.
All right, I want to talk Niners and Rams. And McVay's lost six straight to Shanahan, but I talked about it this week. I said I went back and looked at all six games. And McVay in the NFL has averaged about 27, 28 points a game as a Rams coach. He's averaged about 18 a game in the last six meetings with Shanahan. So to me, a lot of this isn't necessarily the brilliance of Shanahan and McVay is being out-dueled. It comes down to the defensive personnel up front for the Niners gives the offensive line for the Rams some trouble. It blows some stuff up. That's what I see when I watch them play is there's, you know, as you always talk about, Stafford has to hurry it. Goff had to hurry it. The games, I feel like the Niners defensive front personnel is just problematic for the Rams offensive front. That's what my eyes tell me. What's the film say?
Well, it will be this year. It has been this year because that front for the Niners is really good. They play nine different guys who get meaningful snaps. Everybody knows about Bosa, but there's other players who've been really good. Arden Key's played really well. Samson Ebukam has played really well. They get really good snaps as well from Kevin Givens, from DJ Jones. So this is a really good group. They squeeze the pocket. So even when they don't sack the quarterback, they squeeze the pocket. They sacked Stafford five times in the Week 18 game, and he threw some good yards, but they make him uncomfortable. And there are times when Stafford, even though he's not immobile, Colin, where he gets stuck in the pocket.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting because that has been a strength of the Niners. The other factor, just quickly to mention, has been the 49ers' run game.
Yes.
They have physically dominated the Rams' front seven. And that has essentially rendered the Rams' pass rush not a meaningful factor in these games.
Yeah, now that needs to be mentioned because we spend so much time talking about Garoppolo. But I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and they were admitting that if you get McVay and LaFleur privately, they will acknowledge that Shanahan schematically is the best of the three. Now, there's McVay's leadership and his personality and the IQ of LaFleur. They're all really sharp guys. But privately, McVay and LaFleur will go, schematically, Kyle's ahead of us. He you know, his dad was a legendary NFL coach. And sure. I don't think we talk about this enough, is the Niners, Shanahan is so good at the run game that you don't have to draft a running back first, second, third round like his dad. You can
like
just say,
dad,
yeah, we'll just get the running back later. Talk about this run game because it is really the difference in this series.
Well, it's the use of formations and motions are so critical and how they hurt your run support and how they win the numbers game at the point of attack. Because that's what it becomes. It becomes minimizing your run support where the run goes and then having the numbers advantage. They're so good at that with the use of formations and motions. And so, like I said, what happens for the most part is they control the game and they render their pass rush, which, you know, everybody's going to talk this week about Donald, Miller, Floyd, because obviously what they did last week against Tom Brady when he dropped back over 50 times. Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to drop back over 50 times unless the game is so strange in other ways, but that's not going to happen. The first time they met this year when the 49ers killed him, Garoppolo threw 19 balls. That's a Kyle Shanahan game. So they render the pass rush kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I just said that. Watch Aaron Donald have three sacks, Colin, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We're talking tactically is the way the 49ers play.
All right, let's go to your big play of the week. It is, and I said this week, Monday after the game, I said one of the things I've liked watching the Rams as a consumer is the stadium's big. The Stafford move was big. Let's go get Von Miller. They've got a Laker feel. The Lakers with the late Jerry Buss. That they figured the stadium out. The Laker girls, the forum, the lighting, Jack Nicholson. Like they were kind of ahead of the curve a little bit. Like they understood it was a television show. And the Rams are very much about understanding this is a distracted market. This is not Cincinnati. The Lakers, Dodgers. And they take some big swings. But boy, they land a lot of those swings. They hit those things. And I just love the way Stafford... They were leaking. They're capsizing. They're kind of a mess. And they're like, nope, we got 40 seconds. We're going for the win. And I loved it. And that's your big play, is it not?
Yeah, we'll take a look at the 70-yard touchdown to Cooper Kupp, and we'll set a few things straight here on what the coverage was. So we can run that play now and see the touchdown to Cooper Kupp that, you're right, came late. So here it is, and obviously he was wide open, but there was a reason for that. And one of the first things we're going to notice when we look at this play is we're going to notice that Matthew Stafford was with an empty set. Okay, and they're an empty more than any team in the NFL by a wide margin.
Yes.
And then you have Kupp and Jefferson both running vertical routes to the right side of the formation. The Bucs were in cover two. Now, remember, in cover two, the corner is not a deep defender. He's a flat player. Okay, so we're going to focus on Mike Edwards. And what you have to remember about Edwards is his responsibility as a half-field defender in cover two. He needs to line up 2 yards inside the numbers to be in position to defend Kupp's outside vertical. That's his job, because the seam by Jefferson is matched and carried by the middle hole defender. That's the linebacker, Devin White. So that is not Edwards' responsibility. His job is to play the throw, not to react to the route. He reacted to the route and he left his real responsibility, because he's responsible for the outside vertical to Kupp. So Edwards did not play his responsibility properly. That left Kupp wide open. And by the way, the ball was underthrown.
Yeah.
But that's the responsibility of Edwards. He needed to stay 2 yards inside the numbers to react to the throw. You don't react to a route. You react to the throw.
So good. Greg Cosell, great seeing you again, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
This is concerning if you're a Laker fan, and I told you earlier today, the rating, it's one of the most remarkable TV ratings I've ever seen. Los Angeles TVs, on a beautiful sunny day, Sunday was a gorgeous day in LA, a noon start time. It's not like it was prime time Saturday night. The Rams noon game in the fourth quarter did almost a 70% of TVs in Los Angeles. The more diverse a city is, the lower sports ratings you get. That's just the way the game is played. That is an unbelievable number. The Lakers would get half that. And the Lakers forever, it's been a Laker-Dodger town. Laker-Dodger-USC. The Rams have trampled the Lakers in terms of popularity in like 4 years. I mean, they really have. I see Laker ratings. They ain't good. And that's with LeBron. I saw the bubble ratings when we were all stuck at home. I mean, I saw those ratings. I mean, no, we couldn't go outside. They weren't close to that. That is just a... that's how big the NFL is. And by the way, this Lakers story. According to reports, Mark Stein, very reliable NBA guy, there are concerns inside the Lakers organization. They do... they don't want Westbrook. But trading him is a problem, because it will be acknowledging that it was a horrible trade to let go of KCP, who's now averaging 11 a game, and Kyle Kuzma, who's averaging 15, 15 and a half a game. So even though, and this is, you know, an organization is in trouble when they start being paralyzed by optics. You know, this is like the Giants, Dave Gettleman. I'm going to stay with Daniel Jones because you reached at number six to get Daniel Jones. He clearly isn't the guy in 2020 in the NFL, and you're just going to stick with him. And the Giants are going to stick with him. Although nobody looks at Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Kyler Murray, you know, Mahomes and things. Yeah, Daniel Jones can go toe-to-toe with that. But you reach, and instead of just acknowledging, we whiffed, you keep doubling down on a mistake. I thought Westbrook, because the Lakers were so old and AD can't stay healthy, I thought they needed 30 minutes a night of Westbrook and 20 points. Somebody had to score on this team. They had no scorers if LeBron and AD got hurt. It's been worse than I thought. I didn't have a problem moving off Kuzma. LeBron didn't like playing with him. But I will say KCP and Caruso were good defenders, and LeBron really liked playing with Caruso. I never understood that move. He's in Chicago now. But that's it. Also, this is a cautionary tale. Is that star athletes are star athletes. They're not personnel people. LeBron wanted this move. Vogel did not want this move. LeBron did, and now they're trapped. It doesn't work. Westbrook has a lot of friends in the league. They all love him, but sometimes working with friends is not the best idea. Sometimes you have friends and you love them because they're great friends. And you don't necessarily want them next to a cubicle. And I think Westbrook's that guy, is that Harden loved him and LeBron loves him. A lot of players love him. But some friends you don't work well with. So that's a very troubling sign, is the Lakers, instead of just acknowledging we whiffed, are now like, we don't want to make a move because it was a bad move. And if we move him, we're acknowledging it's a bad move. You see this all the time with GMs in the NFL. They draft a guy high and they're loyal to him and he can't play. That's why a new GM often moves off a quarterback very quickly. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Baker Mayfield will be focusing on his rehab this offseason, and he doesn't want to let social media get in the way of that.